I, like Paul, truly appreciate Dr. Radigan's advice, and today I'm not going to follow it, and I am going to preach a sermon. But 99.9 times out of 100, I would follow what he had to say. When I was in eighth grade, I was in love. This was not puppy love, but even if it were, puppy love is real to the puppy. Here I was at the ripe old age of 13, and the love of my life had broken up with me. I was devastated. It is not being overly dramatic to say that I thought my life was over at 13. Okay. Being overly dramatic at 13 is a way of life. I was inconsolable. I had lost my compass, my religion, and my plan for the future. He broke up with me at church camp, of all places. We were at a little church camp outside of Golden, Colorado, in the foothills of the Rockies. I skipped out of the prescribed activities of the afternoon, and I walked a bit down a hill to a secluded spot where I sat on a boulder, and I cried. I was safe in that place. No one was around, and it was a pretty lush spot in the grass. It was sprinkling a little bit, an afternoon mountain mist, and a cloud came. The mountain was literally in the cloud. It was confirmation to me that the world was weeping with me, and that is the one and only time that I have literally been enveloped in a cloud while on the ground. All at once, the sun shone through, and I stopped crying long enough to realize the bright colors all around me. And I thought to myself, look at the many colors of green. Look at them. Mossy green was covering a few of the rocks nearby. The grass had a bright green hue. There were a few ferns that were olive colored. There were yellow green and chartreuse in the other grasses. Some plants were like malachite and lime, and the pine trees stood and they were evergreen color. A small forest bug crawled by, and I was amazed there was an electric green color on its back. And all these green colors popped out at me with this indescribable glow, and I remember thinking how incredible whatever caused the creation was to create so many shades of green. In my long 13 years, I had never experienced anything so real and so beautiful and so vivid. Until that point, it was the richest moment in my life. I was just filled with wonder and a strong sense of knowing that God was real. I was transported out of my life and my grief to see this surreal beauty for just a moment, and my heart began to heal. This experience has stayed with me all of my life, and sometimes when I am down, I close my eyes and I try to reimagine that scene, and I try to connect with the vibrant colors and the feeling of divine presence that I had that day. If you're not a person who believes in God, that is absolutely fine. You may want to call these moments divine in another sense of the word. And although I can't recreate it, that feeling of serenity in my life can still be accessed. That day, God became real to me. Later, when I learned about mysticism in seminary, I found out that other people had had through the centuries have had euphoric, ultra-sensory, spiritual phenomenon moments like this too. And I'm sharing with you not only this moment, but another one too, as we begin our discussion today about making space for progressive Christian convictions. This is going to be our sermon theme for the next 8 weeks. You know, so many of us who are progressive thinkers can quickly name what we don't believe. Are you with me on this? You can quickly say, I don't believe that, right? But these weeks, I want to acknowledge what we can believe. Each week, we'll cover a different topic: God, heaven, justice, the Bible, belief, faith. So today's topic is God. Now, many of us were raised with the idea that God is this kind of supernatural parent. The imagery is rich, and it works for many people. And there's considerable evidence that indicates that most people have an innate desire, even unconscious at times, for this cosmic parent who takes care of us as our earthly parents, or even better than our earthly parents did. And in parent theism, God is often the father, a rule giver, an authoritative parent. And this is a God, of course, who demands obedience and sacrifice. Personally, I struggled mightily with this notion as a young adult. But I had never been exposed to any other images or ways to think about God. And so the experience I had at age 13 began to kind of change my way of thinking. And I could no longer question whether some kind of divine energy was present in the world. But I couldn't describe it or identify it. It wasn't that white God with the beard and the rod and the staff sitting on a throne on a cloud somewhere, but I couldn't name it of either. Acts 17, verses 27 and 28 describe this journey as searching for God, or even better, the Bible actually says this, groping for God. Now that creates some imagery, doesn't it? And with this descriptive poetry, it says, in this God that we search for and we grope for, we live and move and have our being. This is not the authoritative parent kind of God. This is God that is within and around us. This is not a judge who sits in some high off heaven looking down at us. This God is experiential and luminous presence, and it permeates everything that is. This is not a physical God with shape and definition. And so I began to think about this world and life and universe in a different way. I began to think, all that is holy. All that is holy. My second experience that I want to share with you, as many of you know, in 1992, my sister and two of her friends died in a car train accident. And as her older sister, I thought it was my job to prepare the way for her. I was the first child that our parents raised. They made their mistake with me. And by the time she arrived, I thought they were much better parents, in large part due to, well, me. I was the first to walk and to talk and to go to school. I was the first to drive a car and date and take chemistry. I prepared the way. And she grew up, of course, with the benefit of following in my very deliberate footsteps. But when she died, I was absolutely without a frame of reference. She experienced something profoundly new, something I could not replicate. I had failed in my mind to protect and to prepare her. And probably because of my intense focus on this aspect of her death, I had all kinds of responses to trains. And I had for many years this kind of extrasensory experience with trains. I knew where trains were before anyone else could see or feel them. I could tell you if a train was in the northwest part of town or the southeast part of town and which direction it was heading. I did not need lights or cross arms or signals to warn me of their presence. And I had analyzed every single moment in extremely slow motion of what my sister experienced when she died, even though it was instantaneous. I knew her death was instantaneous, but I slowed it in my mind to a very detailed, medically specific physical death. And because I was the older sibling, it was my job, I thought, to wrap my mind all the way around what had happened. Well, several years later, I was driving along Murdoch Street, just past Via Christi St. Francis Hospital. It was early morning, and the sun from the east was right at the position on the horizon where I was blinded by that sun in your eyes when you drive east phenomenon. Those of us who live on the west side know this phenomenon well when we drive east to work. So the tracks at Murdoch and Emporia were only marked with a sign. No cross arms came down when a train was near. And unlike every other time, I had no extrasensory experience of a train, and I just drove across the tracks without pause. As my car was on the tracks, a loud horn blew, and I realized that a towering black engine was bearing down on me. I had not stopped or looked or listened, and I barely got across the tracks. I pulled over with my heart racing. I get shivers thinking about it today. I shivered uncontrollably, and I began to hyperventilate. And instantly, a voice spoke audibly to me, although I was alone in my car. And it said, if this had been her accident, she would already be dead. And I began to slow the heart rate down. And I realized that every minute detail I had scrutinized for months and years was over in a second. And peace of mind came to me, and I relaxed for the first time. She would already have been dead. I know it doesn't sound like it, but it was a great gift. I didn't have to feel guilty or struggle with my grief in the same way anymore. Those divine words that were spoken in that moment were like a warm salve that flowed into my body and eased my pain. And I was free from the mental gymnastics I had played with, and I was free to remember that her life was more important than her death, and I sat in my car on the side of the street for quite a while, and I just basked in the holiness and the wholeness. My spirit soared as it was freed from this burden that I had put on it. These kinds of mystical experiences have actually been studied and described by scholars and thinkers across time. Rudolf Otto called them experiences of the numinous. Abraham Herschel called them moments of radical amazement. Martin Buber spoke of them as I, thou, or I, you moments. And he contrasted these I, you moments with the idea of God as an object or an it. Abraham Maslow called them peak experiences. Marcia Elede called them experiences of the golden world, referring to their luminosity, the bright colors, the bright yellows and greens I described. For many, God is sacred and real, an element of experience, not a hypothetical being who may or may not exist and whom we can only believe in. And this understanding of what is most holy is what the writer of Acts and the writer of Psalm 123 are describing. This God is the holy in which we live and move and have our being. She is the presence within us and around us. Our traditional word beside the Acts one that I've already talked about is from Psalm 139. "Where can I go from your spirit?" asks the psalmist. Where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to the sky, you are there. If I make my bed in the deepest earth, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and settle at the farthest limits of the sea, even there, your hand will follow me. You will hold me fast. As you hear these words from the psalm and from Acts, this is not describing a God that is a separate and a physical being located light years away. This is a spirit that is present in all of creation, including in each one of you. There is nowhere we can be outside of God. Because God is not only everywhere, God is within. Buddhists sometimes speak of it as suchness, the way things are before we categorize them. While progressive thinkers often reject the authoritarian, parental kind of God, I would assert, along with Marcus Borg, that we can draw on these mystical type experiences that we and others have come to an even greater broadening sense of what is holy. Because this holiness is not separate from the universe, but a presence that permeates us all. In the next few weeks, we'll be talking about how we can believe when we reject some of those more recent kinds of theologies. I'm going to be very anxious to hear your own stories of mystic revelation and the nearness of the divine. I told Eric on the way here this morning, I'm stepping into a new place and becoming very vulnerable by telling you stories that make me sound, well, a little bit off. But I hope in my sharing of this moment, these two moments of my life, you'll recognize the holy in your own lives. You'll be able to say, ah, that was God. If you would like to read a book that will follow along with the sermon series, Marcus Borg's Convictions is the book that I am working on. It's not exactly following his book, but I'm drawing from those resources in his book, Convictions. Our closing choral benediction is new, and the choir will sing it once through, and then you're invited to stand and sing it through the second time.
Oh.
We do have a congregational meeting here after the worship service. Those who are visiting with us, you're invited to go, as well as anyone else who would, down to Fellowship Hall, where there's cookies and coffee and treats for you. And we hope that you will stay long enough for us to come and greet you as well. I send you out today as we take a moment. I send you out to find those deep mysteries that remind you are not alone as you go through this life. Amen.